Well, it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, joined as always by pastor and friend Jason Hayes. Today, Jason, marks 18 years. 18 years.
That is truly incredible.
Since the 9/11 attacks.
Yes, so here we are, September 11th. It's hard to believe. It really is. 18 years. Do you still remember where you were?
Yeah, and I was even driving yesterday thinking, hold on, 18 years. I was doing the math. I was like, okay, I was 17. And I was like, that doesn't make, there's no way it's been 18 years. And so, yeah, I was a senior in high school in Cornersville, Tennessee. I was in, first block is what we called
it. How did they handle that? Did they put everyone in front of a TV or did they
no,
send everyone home?
No,
or
they acted like it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so in that particular class I was in was geometry or something, and Coach Lee was the teacher in there. Coach Lee was also a guardsman and an officer in the National Guard. And Coach Lee, for anyone that happens to listen to this that grew up where I grew up, you're gonna know this about Coach Lee. He would periodically just leave class. He wouldn't tell you where he was going. He never thought like he
I
had to give
Coach
you an explanation.
I've never met him, but I love that.
But just
man
randomly he'd be teaching and all of a sudden he would go, he would just look. He wouldn't even say, I'll be back. He would just walk out. And then we would all look at each other like, well, that's what Coach Lee does. And then he would come back before the bell rang and give you your assignment or whatever. Well, this particular day he walked out of class. And the bell rang. He never came back to class.
Wow.
And so we go in the hallways and we're hearing, you know, different things about what's going on. And so you start hearing like from people in the halls at break time, like something's happening in New York. We don't know. So I go to my next class and it was music because it makes sense for a senior to take music. And I was, you know, whatever.
You were well on your way to a musical
Well,
career.
Very cultured.
Yeah.
And so, in Cornersville, Tennessee. And so, went into Miss Moffitt's class and Miss Moffitt was like, take your seats, blah, blah, blah. And I went, you know, I had that senioritis. And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I went, Miss Moffitt, I'm not taking my seat. We've heard a lot of things about what's going on, but nobody's telling us what's going on. I'm going to turn the radio on and listen to what's going on because we didn't have Twitter and you know, smartphones and stuff like that. And she was like,
colors.
Yeah.
You didn't have really anything.
We didn't have anything. Everything was black
paper,
and white.
Paper.
Yeah.
You were just like,
and
it was,
so,
you were functioning off
so
tablets.
I'm going to grab your boombox and I'm going to listen to, nice. To the news. And so, so she finally agreed to that. And then that's when we begin to learn.
Man.
And my dad will probably call me today and say, do you remember when that happened? He called the school, and said, are y'all letting them out? What are y'all doing? And they said, no, we're not doing anything. And he said, I almost came and got you. I was like, Daddy, I'm 17, had my own vehicle. And he was like, well, it didn't matter. I almost came and got you out of school because it didn't seem to me like they were taking it serious. And here's the thing that never in our lifetime, that had never happened. I don't
think
they really knew
what
to do. Where were you? Were you here in Knoxville?
Yeah, so the crazy thing is I was actually in Oak Ridge
at
the
time.
Which
I'm sure was concerning.
I was at Hyder's shoe store of all the places. I had gone down there with a buddy and we began to get information and we were kind of already out of town or kind of moving back towards Knoxville. And so I actually ended up indeed watching it in the Family Life Center, First Baptist Concord, watching the majority of things happen. But when it initially happened was kind of in downtown Oak Ridge, which is very interesting for those that you know, may be listening from abroad.
Right.
Because, you know, from China and all of our listeners out there, you know, but no, seriously, people that may be listening via podcast beyond kind of our listening area, Oak Ridge is, you know, I mean, where they built the atomic
bomb. Yeah, it's a big deal.
You know,
it's
nuclear.
It was literally a city that was put together with a purpose of fighting war.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, would be considered to be a fairly high risk city in some type of national threat. And so, I've often wondered, you know, if we'd have been there for a little bit longer, would we have been held up? Would we have been able to get out of the city or, you know, and so, man, it's just crazy to think it's been 18 years. You know, I think today we want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
We want to talk about not so much just the time of it, but, to talk about really what it's done to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our point of the show is to talk about events, that exist between Sundays, you know, things that kind of happen, in and out of our life, and those sometimes things are happening right there in the present, but also sometimes they're things that have happened in the past, and we have to stop and reflect, like, how do we look at these things through a gospel lens? We also have to consider, as you and I were talking even off air, we have to consider, like, what have certain events done to our heart?
Mm-hmm.
What have certain events done to our society? How do we still, even after 18 years, think about something like that? Or maybe it might be that when we have similar events, and although we're fortunate to have not had an event to that degree, there's still all kinds of tragedy. There's still all kinds of terror type things happening around us. And some of those are domestic, and some of those things are international in nature. But like, how do we process these things? Cause it feels like there's been a bit of a shift.
Well, even in processing, if you think back to, I know that where I grew up in Middle Tennessee, even in that small town where we had very few connections to anyone in New York City, nobody in my class had a dad that traveled a lot for business or anything like that. And so being in a small town, it wrecked us as well. And all the churches opened their doors that night. And pretty much were like, anytime this week you want to come pray, you want to come pray for this country, pray for the folks in New York. Disaster relief teams went to go serve. And so I think back to that time, and I think about how a lot of things were put on the shelf, a lot of the tribalism, a lot of the politics, and we said where we need to be right now is in our churches with our church family, praying for our neighbors in New York and around the country. And I wonder, in those moments, I don't see that being the thing today. I don't see the first thought being, wow, we need to get with our church family. We need to, our pastor needs to lead in this area. We need to have a candlelight visual. Right. We need to be praying for what's going on.
How do you think we would respond differently 18 years, if we experienced, and God forbid, but if we experienced a major terrorist attack, that's on our, on our land here, stateside, how do you think we would respond differently today?
Yeah, I think today I'm typically an assume the best guy.
Right.
But until I have a reason to assume the worst. And I think,
given the Vols.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
sorry.
And so given the last 18 years, I think we almost are at a place where we're going, it's hard for me to assume the best in those moments with social media, with the quick to post and the quick to state opinions and to say things and the refusal to recognize anything good.
Right.
From the other side, whether you're whether you find yourself on the right or the left or somewhere in between, a lot of us refuse to see anything good from the other side. Well, and so if something were to happen now, a lot of people would simply see that through the lens of who's in the Oval Office. So if he made any kind of good decision, we can't support it.
Right.
Or vice versa. If it would have happened during the Obama administration, there had been a large group of people saying, look, it doesn't matter. We can't unify under that leadership.
Right. And I think some would say, so let's go back to 18 years ago, and we've got George W. Bush in the office and in the White House, and you've got a clear distinction between someone like Obama and Bush or Trump and Bush.
Yeah.
And so some people would say, well, you're just talking about different leaders. Well, honestly, I'm not sure that where we are today with any leader we had in the White House, that there would be that type of unification that exists.
I don't think there would be.
You know what? Do you remember what approval ratings were? I mean, they skyrocketed for
George,
a season.
George W. I mean, if you remember back to the 2000 election, everyone thought Al Gore was the president.
Yeah.
And then it went, Al Gore conceded, and then he was like, whoa, Florida's not done yet. Right. We need to check Florida.
And meanwhile, you had Jeb
was
Florida.
The governor of Florida. Yeah. And so it was a big mess. And then finally they announced George W. is the president. I had the W sticker on
my... Half the country wouldn't even accept that.
No, it was very heated. A lot of bad things said, very negative, very, very tribalistic, very red, blue.
A lot of people wanted the inventor of the internet to
exactly,
be
exactly,
the president.
Exactly. Right. Man, 18 years ago. Crazy, crazy time. And so Bush's rating was probably, you know, somewhere around the 50% mark, yeah. 55% mark. When you first step into office, it's going to be a little over 50. But after 9/11, for about a year, he was at 80, close
crazy.
To 90%, highest of any president.
It's impossible to think that would happen today.
And by the time he was done, he was one of the lowest rated
right.
Presidents. And the interesting thing is, after 18 years, so we've had 8 years of Obama, we've had almost 4 years of Trump, and now, if you watch the media, it's like they forget all the terrible things they said about W.
Right.
And for me, I'm looking back and going, George W. was the leader we needed at that time. Now, you can question the war and all of those things, but for that moment, the way he watching him hug on people down at
right.
Ground Zero, watching him do those things. And we're going to hear in a little bit, probably in the next segment, a clip of what was done at Ground Zero. But I don't think if that were to happen today, we would see a huge jump
right.
in approval rating because people are so polarized on the issues.
Right. And I think that's where we want to, you know, we want to consider for the show today is that it's not so much, we're not trying to so much have a political discussion here. I think what we can say though is, the fact that we can't, that we likely could not even be unified around a moment of crisis.
Right.
You talking about, I'm not sure that people would flood our churches today
no.
in a moment of
yeah.
crisis. I'm not sure that you wouldn't have an immediate kind of politicizing certain situations because Andrew, we see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
We see a school shooting. We see, you know, some type of other episode or situation that happens in our nation and what occurs. It's immediately, we don't come together first.
Yeah.
We almost immediately, with the exception of those that have been like intimately impacted, meaning those in that community, it feels like as a nation, we immediately try to politicize an issue. And so with that said, if we have this lack of kind of, even if it's just momentary unity, if we have this lack of, even if it's just momentary turning to God,
mm-hmm.
if we have even a lack of just, even as I said, a momentary lapse in not politicizing things, what does that say about us?
Yeah.
You know, what does it say about our hearts? What does it say about our society? I think it's really telling, and I think it's indicting.
Well, we even have moments now where you're told you can keep your prayers.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, so you think back 18 years
yeah, yeah.
ago, we were running to
I mean,
to churches,
many people would say,
everybody, even
we don't
on,
need your thoughts and
yeah.
prayers. We need action.
Yeah, and so
yeah.
18 years ago, even on national news, I mean, your national what we would consider America's anchors, which I don't
right.
even know if we have those anymore, but we think back to 18 years ago, even they were saying, look, we need to be pray
yes.
for these families.
And God help us.
Yeah.
I can remember certain key statements being said
and
similar to that.
And
yes.
those are, man, we've gone a long way in 18 years, and we'll talk more about that when we come back. Jason, you have
like
no,
we're 18 years later and I still have cold.
You have no idea.
You USA!
I mean,
USA!
What I love, there's so many things I love about that clip. And if you haven't seen it, like, hearing it is awesome, and that was amazing. But if you haven't seen that clip, so George W. is standing at ground zero.
On a massive pile of rubble.
Yeah. And so there's destruction and damage all around him. There's firefighters all around him. Firefighters that we know now looking back that have not only died, some died in the rubble, but some also have died because of diseases afterwards. And George W. has his arm around, a firefighter.
Yep.
And he's got his arm around a firefighter. Secret Service clearly is there, but you don't really see them. And so he's talking on a megaphone. And what I love about it is New Yorkers being New Yorkers.
Absolutely.
Firemen going, go get him, George.
Yes,
and like, exactly. That's the president. And they're calling him George.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you hear somebody in the back say, we can't hear you. And then on the fly, without any notes, one of the greatest lines ever.
Truly.
And I was telling you off air, this speech is what did it for me. So if you know me personally, politics and the
You've
world.
You've never had any interest in this.
Not at all. The world of policy and public service and all that has always been, kind of first and foremost in my mind, in terms of the direction I thought the Lord was calling me. And before that, before 9/11, that was not the case.
Right.
I thought my dad was silly talking about politics. I thought my grandparents were silly talking about it. I was like, that's dumb. Why do we talk about policy? Why do we care what's going on in D.C.? And after the buildings went down, after the terrorist attack of 9/11, and hearing George W. speak,
man,
it changed everything
yeah.
for me. Everything for me. And to this day, if I go back to anything, if I run into a politician or a public figure, I'm not going to approach. I'm not that guy. But if I ran into George W., that man's going to get a hug from
Absolutely.
Me. As long as the Secret Service allow that.
I think we actually mentioned this a few shows ago. But I would still say, not anywhere close to this, but I would say another amazing moment was Yankee Stadium.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
When George W. Yeah. comes out and he throws the first pitch.
And it's a strike.
And he drills yep. it. And in fact, they wanted him to, if you ever watched yep. the document, they wanted him to be on the front of the mound. And he was like, we are not doing that.
Yep.
Like, I'm getting up on the mound. And at whatever age he was,
yeah.
he flat
okay,
guns
so,
it
so,
and throws a strike and pandemonium
yeah.
ensues.
So as we think about that and we think about clutch shots, clutch moments of sports history, whether it be LeBron James in a big game, Michael Jordan in a big game, Kobe,
nothing
Tiger Woods,
more clutch than that.
I don't think there is.
No.
I mean, that is one pitch.
You're talking about the entire, like,
everybody's
like the
watching.
Emotional weight
in New York
of
City.
The entire nation.
The firefighters are still cleaning up the rubble.
Correct. Oh, yeah. They're
all that
got,
is still happening.
They've got years ahead of still.
All that
work.
Is still yeah. happening. And in front of the world.
Unbelievable.
He throws a strike. And you know, some people would argue that baseball isn't America's pastime anymore. But it still kind of brings us to a place
oh, it was great, man.
That everyone is going, that's what we needed.
So it's interesting, you know, again, we want to talk today about how it's impacted us, you know, and are there some things to glean and some things to maybe consider about our hearts? But there's some really hard stuff,
yeah.
I think there, but I think there's also some really great stuff. And so let's spend some time in kind of this segment talking about some of the things that I think that there were positive that,
yeah.
that came out of it. One of the things that you mentioned was talking about this current graduating class of New York firefighters.
Yeah, it's amazing. The New York Post just ran an article about the most recent 2019 graduating class. And I love this. And it said, they start by saying, consider it a sign of America's resilience and New York City spirit. On this year's 9/11 anniversary, the Fire Academy's class of 2019 will include at least 13 graduates who lost a firefighter father on that day.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
And plus one son of a police officer who perished and two firefighters that died of 9/11 related illnesses.
That's
and so,
so cool.
As I'm reading that, I'm thinking about the legacy that was left.
Right.
That so much so that a son would go, I want to be like my dad.
Yep.
I want to pursue that. And that's the heart of who we are.
I do hope that there is that is indicative of a real legacy that, and a real kind of remnant of 9/11 is that there has been a generation of people that I hope would have seen just how admirable it was that when those men and women chose to go into those towers and to do something that was so selfless and to do something that was so sacrificial for the sake of others. Man, it's cool to hear how that's impacted, you know, sons and daughters. But I hope it's really impacted us as a nation. And I think that there's pockets that we do see that. And I think that, you know, still today, there's going to be all kinds of memorials and things that are going to happen here, on September 11th. And I hope that that's one of the things that's continued to be elevated is just the idea of selflessness. And candidly, although I think in many cases, that's just kind of been deemed as a general kind of good moral thing to be, or maybe it's almost even deemed more patriotic in nature. I mean, candidly, that is who Christ has called us to be. Yeah. He's called us to take up our cross. He's called us to die to self. He's called us to put the needs of others before ourselves. I mean, these are foundational things to our faith. And so I hope that something like 9/11 and its legacy will continue to point us towards that. What else do you see in there?
Yeah, I mean, I think even to a place of from north and south, being a kid from small rural Tennessee, who had plenty of thoughts about New Yorkers that were not good.
Right.
That we were at a place for a long time where we were like, we're all New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Or even you think not too long after that, the Boston bombers, when that occurred at the Boston Marathon, we're all Bostonians. You know, we get to a place where we say, look, we couldn't be more different. But in this moment in time, we're one. And that's a beautiful thing that I'm praying we haven't moved away from. That's not so much nationalism. It's certainly part of being patriotic and those type things. But it's saying, especially from a biblical worldview, it's saying these are our neighbors. And our neighbors lost family members that day, and they weren't expecting that.
Well, and some of that too is, you know, that there is the reality in play that it's a lot easier to just, you can be in New York in 2 hours from here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, in the sense of hopping on a plane and how mobile we are and kind of, you know, how our society is, so transient in so many ways. And of course, social media and technology and all that stuff. So there is this thing that has probably, only been propelled by technology and development, which was, hey, we really aren't as different as we maybe once thought we were, you know, or at least there's these things that are a common thread. Now, I would say, interestingly enough, and I could be completely wrong on this, but I don't sense a lot as a Southerner, I don't sense a lot of that animosity between us and the North anymore.
Yeah.
I would say I sense that animosity between us and California per se or something of that sort that feels more,
Portland.
That feels more kind of this kind of liberal bent or things of that sort. And so, man, I hope that's one of those things that we drew out of it. That we're like, hey, we're all made in the image of God. We're all unified in this thing that is America. And let's put some of our differences aside.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
So as we continue the conversation, 18 years later, it is really, really hard to believe. And I was talking with the family last night thinking, this is the biggest historical event that's occurred in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I would say. And so I was 17. A lot of people, around my age at that time went and immediately joined the military and went immediately to serve.
Did you have any consideration of that at all?
I absolutely did.
Yeah.
And even talking to my kids this morning, a little bit about it. They're young, so we didn't go into great detail, but I just told them, you know, we need to remember 18 years ago, something terrible happened, in this country. And I told him, I said, you know, a lot of people my age went and joined the military to protect us. And those are things that we have to.
I think if I would have been your age, I mean, I'm only like a year older, you know, but I was, I am a little bit older, and by a little bit, we mean a few years, you know, but, I was a little bit further down the road in career or I should say ministry, and married and things of that sort. And so I didn't give that a ton of consideration.
Yeah.
But I think that if I were at your age, I would have certainly considered it. My father served in the reserves, and grandfathers both served in the military. And so, man, we even 18 years later, let us just stop and say thanks again to everyone who is serving and has
served.
To,
we have to recognize it. That event, not just for those in New York, in Pennsylvania, in D.C., the Pentagon was hit too, which we kind of don't even talk about. And the plane that went down in Pennsylvania because of heroes on that plane. And so, but that event changed the lives of people across this country.
Right.
It families lost sons that went on to fight against terrorism around the world.
You're right.
And so when I think it's important when we look at our culture and our country, when we look at what's gone on, whether there's protest or different things that happen, the reason some people get so amped when you try to say something about the flag or when you try to make a comment about this country, the reason why that lights a fuse and people get angry is because of 18 years ago.
Yeah.
And it transformed families.
Well, it transcended far beyond the moment, and I couldn't agree with you more. In the sense of 9/11 started something that would impact families,
absolutely,
generations. I mean, it was this thing that really did, as you said, you know, you might have not lost a loved one at 9/11, but you might have, you know, lost a loved one who enlisted in the military and went and served in the Middle East and died 7 years later.
Yep.
I mean, you're
even
talking
last year.
Yeah, or last year, you right? Know? I mean, yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it is this really just transcendent event that didn't just impact Americans. I mean, that's the thing; it impacted people all across the globe. And so, without question, we've talked about how it's probably created some things that were really good for us as a nation. There's a possibility that it created some things, or maybe I wouldn't say that it created some things. Maybe we can look at our current state and say, I'm not sure we would respond that way, which is probably indicting as to where we're at. But what about just your own personal heart? Like when you think back of 2001, 9/11, is there anything in you, like in your heart, that you, if you were to really consider, and we don't very often do that, but is there anything that event or the following events after that, that you almost have to look at your heart and say, is that good or is that honorable?
100%. There were, right after that occurred, I was a radio DJ in my small town, and, you know, I would put that Toby Keith song on loop.
Yes.
Alan Jackson song on loop. Those things, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Toby Keith 9/11, you'll
right.
get it.
Yeah.
But I would say things like, we need to turn the Middle East into a parking lot.
Right.
Like I would say that out loud.
Right.
And it wasn't until I felt no remorse in saying that at all.
Right.
At no point did I feel conviction to repent from saying we need to turn the Middle East into a parking lot, not taking into effect at all that there were going to be innocent people that would lose their life and go straight to hell if we did those things.
Right.
And it wasn't until we moved to Knoxville and I'm sitting in a church service and David Platt is on the screen.
I thought you were for sure going to say Shoreline Church.
No.
We didn't exist at the time, but
it wasn't.
But
it wasn't.
Okay. Yeah. I guess so, another church could do something.
So David Platt was on the screen talking about international missions.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he even used the words, some of you have said we should turn this place into a parking lot.
Yeah.
And I just wept.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I've said that, Dave. Like, I've said it and I meant it.
Yeah.
And I need to repent of that. And so personally for me, it's been a process over these 18 years to juggle patriotism, love of country. I mean, I have American flag socks on today. Like that, along with.
You do. You have American
the gospel.
Socks. I noticed them when you got out of the truck.
They're pretty noticeable.
I apologize.
Yeah.
You didn't get out of a truck.
That's right.
You got out of the van.
Let's,
but I did notice the socks.
Yes.
They're fantastic.
And so there's those things that we're trying to juggle and trying to make sure that our hearts are in the right place.
Tough,
and it's a struggle.
It is. And man, I've been there too. You know, like just knowing that there is a, I think there's a righteous anger.
Sure.
I think a righteous anger, what we see of the Lord. I mean, the Lord has righteous anger. And I think that is okay. And so to have a righteous anger that is against evil and that is against, that grieves the loss of innocent people and grieves over the sinfulness of the heart and all this other stuff, that there's a righteous anger that I believe is justified where we have somehow slipped at times is where we've translated that into hatred.
Yeah.
And we lose sight of that there are still people that are made in the image of God. And I think at times, even if we're not careful, we begin to paint, people groups with a really broad stroke. And I know that was something that I had to really wrestle with when this all went down 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course we talk about, racism seems to be an issue across the landscape everywhere we talk today, but it almost was for a season that it was okay. It was okay that if you could just paint everyone with one brush and if anyone looked like someone who potentially, knocked down a tower, then it was almost okay. And we could use expressions like them and they and assume that everyone was some militant,
radical.
And so again, I think those are things, one, we just have to continue to submit to the Lord. Like, Lord, these are things that are in our heart. Like, we grieve over tragedy. We grieve when something happens and not just in 2001, but when something happens today, we grieve over it. We're angry about it. But Lord, also protect our hearts from not becoming things that are dishonoring unto you, and remind us that maybe our better posture is anger and grief and sorrow as opposed to hatred.
Well, that and service. I think a lot of people, some certainly joined up to do a number of different things because they wanted to go kill bad guys.
Right.
And go protect this land. And we need folks that want to protect this land. We certainly do. And some folks said, I talked with a guy just the other day that's part of disaster relief with the Southern Baptist Convention. And I think about those men and women that saw what happened in New York or that see a tragedy and go, I'm going to put everything else on hold and I'm going to go serve. Yeah. I'm going to go help. I don't care what their background is. I don't care where they're from. I'm going to go clean up their yard. I'm going to go help clean up rubble. I'm going to go feed them. Most of the meals that the Red Cross give out are prepared by Southern Baptist Disaster Relief.
Correct. That's a cool.
We need to know that.
Absolutely.
And celebrate that. And so that's Christians partnering with organizations that may not necessarily be Christian
and are not going to point towards these people on the news and say, oh, by the way, the North American Mission Board are the folks that are folding this off.
Yeah. And so it's an amazing thing that we see, but we also need to be willing to look at ourselves and go, I probably went too far in that, in that moment in time. And we see that even today with different things that occur in our own lives. We go, that anger probably wasn't justified.
Yeah.
Some anger is.
Yep.
But a lot of our anger is pride and sin and even hate filled. And that can take us down a terrible, terrible path.
Right. And again, do not hear us today, saying, hey, that grief or sorrow or again, even anger, some of those things in a righteous way are wrong. Those were justified.
Yeah.
We just have to continue to constantly submit our whole self to the Father and say, Lord, refine us, renew us, transform us. And I think even in moments like those, we find some pockets where we need some work, and we're grateful that the Lord does it.
Yep.
Before you start your preaching, let me ask you this, my friend. Have you forgotten?
Wow, Daryl Worley. You didn't even know that, did you?
No, that is no.
That's my country roots, country radio roots coming up. Daryl Worley, that's another great one.
You grew
Man,
up,
I forgot about that song.
You grew
it's so
up
good.
In, you grew up in Cornersville?
Yeah.
I grew up in Farragut.
And
that is why I've never heard this song, ever.
Daryl Worley, Have You Forgotten? Man, thank you for bringing that song.
That's good work over there, Dave.
That song.
Good work.
That's good stuff. Daryl Worley is, yeah, man. There's a lot of country acts, Trace Atkins, Daryl Worley, Toby Keith, that really became prominent after 9/11.
I don't want to say they monetized the moment, but they may have,
but they knew how to speak the language.
Yeah. And with that said, yeah, it definitely gave somewhat of an anthem to people.
For sure.
So it's not.
Man, that's a good one. I haven't heard that in so long.
Know, it's not as if they just did something that was just to make a dollar. They did give a voice to people.
Absolutely.
But, all right. So, you know, we talked about some obviously really serious stuff.
Yeah, it's been a heavy
today.
Show,
heavy
man.
Heavy show. So let's lighten it up just a little bit. Let's talk about all time best patriotic song.
You want me to go first?
Yes.
Lee Greenwood. God Bless the USA.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
What do I do now?
I don't know.
You were going to ask me, but you've now taken.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a better. I mean, that one every time gives
me
chills.
From the lakes of Minnesota.
Oh, my gosh. Come on.
To the hills of Tennessee. Man,
across
that's good.
The plains of Texas.
From sea to shining
sea. So good.
Sea.
And so, you know,
man,
I think back even.
Do we have to pay royalties? Did we just say that
maybe,
on there?
Maybe. But even I think back to high school after 9/11. We had patriotic events at school, and that was one of the songs we sang as a group.
Ever seen Lee Greenwood live?
I haven't.
I saw him.
He has other songs.
Well, here's the great thing. So this is when we lived in Nashville.
Okay.
I chose. I don't even know why I chose to do this, but I just wanted to get to know. I was actually focusing mostly on like young adult ministry.
Yeah.
And I was serving as a teaching pastor. But we had this awesome senior adult ministry, and I just decided this was before kids.
Yeah.
And I just decided, you know, what would be great. Let me go get some change in my pocket, some relational equity with some of our senior adults. So I went with them on a Gatlinburg.
Wow.
Like it was like a Jubilee type deal or something, you know, like kind of Southern gospel deal. But the special guest, Lee Greenwood. Okay. And so they waited till the very end, and Lee Greenwood, stood up and he sang that song. Yeah. And so everyone, like all these senior adults stood up and they had their flags and things of that sort. And no kidding. Like, I guess there had been some agreement that, you know, he was going to be able to sing more than just one song. Of course, no one really wanted him to sing more than one song.
Just sing it again.
Exactly right.
Just do it again.
Sing it again. I will wave the flag all night long. And he immediately, like, his next song was something about, like, drinking and women or something like that.
Yeah.
And that crowd just, literally, they went from waving their flags alongside Lee Greenwood.
To throwing tomatoes.
They all just left. They just left. They just had it on out and went to bed.
I'll be honest.
And I was
in country radio, and I love country music. I couldn't name you another song you sang.
No. And I don't want to, but it was something. Yeah, I don't remember if it was exactly Drinking and Women, but I do remember it at least had some content in it that did not jive with that audience. And,
here's the thing.
Here's what we can know. God Bless America jives with every audience.
It will forever be the song. I mean, I don't know. There's been other songs that have come.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking, look, we got to do something patriotic. We got to have this patriotic event. We need a real crescendo for fireworks.
Yeah.
Everybody's going, Lee Greenwood, you need to go with that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the song you need to go with.
I was and it's got a couple lines in there that are a tad questionable for me, but I was a big We Shall Be Free fan.
Ooh, that's
Garth
a good one.
Brooks. Speaking of Garth
Brooks.
He's
coming to
Neyland Stadium.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. You know what else is a big deal?
What?
We'll be back next Wednesday.
We will be back next Wednesday, and it'll be more lighthearted, maybe.
I hope so.
Maybe. We'll talk to you next week.